Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, or you can listen to us streaming live over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what they have to say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is power. Maybe no two places are more associated with power than business and Hollywood. Our guests today are going to talk about both. In our first half hour, we'll be talking to a leading authority on power in business. Who better to talk about it than a business school professor who teaches MBAs how to become powerful in their careers. In the second half hour, we've got a man who's been a publicist, a screenwriter, Hollywood historian, and he's going to talk about power in Hollywood and how it's changed over his 45-year career. If you're feeling powerful and you want to call us and join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Jeffrey Pfeffer is a professor of organizational behavior at the Graduate School of Business up at Stanford University, where he's been since 1979. That's a good long career. He is the author or the co-author of 13 books. His latest book is titled Power, Why Some People Have It and Others Don't. Dr. Pfeffer received his BS and his MS degrees from Carnegie Mellon University back in Pittsburgh and his PhD out here on the West Coast from Stanford. He began his career at the business schools at the University of Illinois, and then he taught up at Berkeley as well. He's been a visiting professor to Harvard, Singapore Management University, London Business School, and he's a frequent visitor to ISA. Did I pronounce that right, Doctor?
It's actually ESA, but yes.
ESA, okay. And he currently serves on the board of directors for profit companies, Audible Magic, as well as nonprofits, Quantum Leap Healthcare, and the San Francisco Playhouse. Welcome to the show, Jeffrey. How are you today?
I'm perfect, and thank you so much for inviting me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you on, because what better topic than to talk about than power? So let's just get right into it. How do you define power? What is power to you?
Well, you can define it several different ways. I tell my students on the first day of class that my objective in the course is to make sure they never have to leave a job involuntarily. So that's one way of defining power. It's the ability to get your way in contested decisions and organizations. It's basically the ability to get things done.
Okay. Well, now, inherent in the fact that you teach this to MBA students, you must believe that power is learned and it's not something that we're just born with. Is that a fair statement?
That is a completely fair statement. You know, there's been a lot of research on genius generally, which is encompasses many things besides power. And what the research shows is that almost every person can get much better at virtually everything through assiduous practice and good coaching and training and learning. So, you know, we think that golf is a natural talent or that dancing is a natural talent, and there's obviously individual differences. But everybody can improve in virtually anything that they set their mind to do, and that is certainly true for acquiring, wielding, and holding on to power. So, yes, it can be learned. The skills behind it can certainly be developed.
All right, and I want to dig into that a little bit deeper, but before we go there, many people who are listening to the sound of our voice really believe that the pursuit of power is sort of Machiavellian or sinister. You can say that that's not necessarily true, though. Isn't that right?
That is right. First of all, you know, you need to take care of yourself. You know, look around the world and, you know, organizations, you know, we go to work for these organizations and institutions and hope that they will be beneficent and nice and take care of us. But that isn't the case. Organizations throw people out all the time. Partnerships throw people out. Law, accounting, even in the venture capital industry, people who've made their colleagues billions of dollars get thrown out on their butts. So part of this is learning to survive and succeed in organizations. You have to understand the game, and you have to understand the rules by which the game is played, and don't believe that the world is a just and fair place. So you need to take care of yourself, because I'm not sure the organizations for which you work are necessarily going to take care of you.
No, that's well said. In fact, it's funny that you should say the world is not just, because that is the quote that they have in the Economist article that I read that actually prompted me to ask you to come on to the show. Tell us a little bit. How did you get written up in the Economist? That's quite a coup.
Well, you know, we sent them the book and they found it interesting. And I think journalists in general find this book interesting. Much of the leadership literature, as you know, is kind of positive, kumbaya-like. You know, it's kind of, you know, do the scout-like thing, you know, boy or girl scouts, take your favorite pick, you know, be nice, honest, hardworking, ethical, et cetera, and the world will take care of you. And that isn't the case. You know, my dear friend Rudy Crewe, who was now teaching in Southern California at USC in the School of Education, prior to that, he was named the best school superintendent in America when he was running Miami-Dade County Schools, and 6 months after receiving that award, he was negotiating his severance package with the Miami school board that didn't like him, regardless of his objective job performance. So the world isn't a fair place, and that I think appeals, or the fact that this is a pretty honest book as opposed to some of the books on leadership, I think has a sensibility that has appealed to many journalists.
I would agree with that. Now, the thing that I found interesting and appealing about your book is that a lot of your strategies are counterintuitive. Let me give you an example. If you read Jack Welch's book or Rudy Giuliani's book, you get that picture that the world is fair, you get what you deserve, work hard, and you'll rise to the top. You, on the other hand, you say power is dependent on taking several concrete steps. What are those steps?
One step is, obviously, or maybe not so obviously, figuring out where you want to go and whether or not you're willing to pay the price for getting there. Power requires lots of effort and energy, as, by the way, does, you know, good job performance in general. And, you know, it requires making trade-offs, including spending that time and energy building your career, maybe as contrasted with spending time with your friends or family. And, you know, you look at any of the successful politicians, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Rudy Giuliani, who we've already mentioned, Meg Whitman, I'm sure there are days when she's out campaigning for governor and she says, why am I doing this? You know, I've got tons of money. Why should I be taking this abuse and working this hard and traveling all over in these, you know, even if it's in a private jet, it's still hard work. So I think one thing is to figure out what you want to do and what you want to achieve. And then I think another counterintuitive strategy is asking for help. People are really reluctant to ask. They're afraid they're going to be turned down. Well, if you ask for something and somebody says no to you, what's the worst that's happened? You didn't get what you weren't going to get anyway had you not asked. And so, you know, I try to teach my students to be bold. Keith Ferrazzi, on whom I wrote a case, the famous marketing guru, when he was graduating from Harvard Business School, had a job offer from Deloitte Consulting, and he said, I'll take the job as long as I can meet with Pat LeConte, who at the time was head of Deloitte Consulting, once a year and have dinner with him. And it turns out that worked pretty well, and he got access to the senior people. So we need to be a little bolder in what we ask for and what we try. The worst that people can say is no.
Wow. All right. A very, very interesting perspective there. Now, you also have some other very concrete steps that you, in your book, you emphasize with case studies, examples. Some of them are like showing some initiative and taking projects on that other people don't want. Why would that be important to advancing your career?
Well, you know, I think a lot of us think that we need to do the glamorous stuff, but it's oftentimes the unglamorous task that nobody else wants to do that will get you a lot of visibility and notice. One of the examples I use in the book is a former student, who went to work at a hedge fund and, you know, took over analyst recruiting. Well, nobody wants to recruit the analysts. The analysts come in, they stay for 2 or 3 years, and then they go back to business school, so they're not going to be there very long. it's kind of a pain in the butt. Everybody wants to do the more glamorous work of, you know, investment and investment strategy. But if you take on analyst recruiting, you're in contact with all the analysts, and they are grateful once they get a job there to you. And secondly, it's a position that brings you into contact as you set the analyst schedules and set up the events for the recruiting, brings you into contact with all your colleagues at that hedge fund, and they come to know you and you interact with them, and you become central in the communication network. And that would be just one example, setting up seminars, doing anything that brings people together and gets you in contact with them. Is a good way to build relationships and to build some reputation for yourself.
Okay, that is good. I love this story. That was Mike, the hedge fund manager there. Now, you've also got some other things there. Put yourself in the middle of information flows within the organization. How does that help you advance your career?
Well,
get more power.
It helps you advance in two ways. First of all, if you're in the center of the information flow or the center of the communication network, you'll know more than lots of other people because the information will be flowing through and around you. And secondly, to the extent that you're in the center of the communication network, other people, you'll have more visibility with other people. And then, you know, part of this, I think people underestimate the power of what the social psychologists call mirror exposure. We buy products that are familiar to us, and then we hire people who we remember, who we know. And so a lot of this is just around getting enough exposure so that people know who you are. And this is particularly true in a big organization where there are lots of people and you're competing with lots of people. People will pick the people who they remember, who they think about.
That makes sense. Now, one of the examples that you give in your book, again, being a little bit counterintuitive, wasn't one of your graduates from one of your MBA classes, but actually a very famous personality, Lyndon Baines Johnson. How did he achieve his great power and ultimately become the president of the United States by being the whip of the House? What was the connection there?
Well, he was actually the minority whip in the Senate.
But he,
I think, also exemplifies this idea of taking on a nothing job. When he took this job, nobody wanted it. His boss, Ernest McFarlane, had no power and was very ineffective. And he began by basically doing small favors for people. You know, there are bills that people want passed, which are not contested, kind of sense of the Senate bills. He would get those scheduled. He would help people with information about what was going on and when the calendar was happening, so they would know when to be on the floor of the Senate and when they could go back and campaign with their constituents or visit their families back home. And so in doing relatively small favors and in taking relatively small jobs, he put himself in a position where people knew him, people owed him, and people began to recognize his amazing competence and ability to get things done. And this is consistent with this idea of doing everything that you do as well as you can do it, because you can't always tell when those small jobs will have big meaning for other people.
Ah, that is so true. We're talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, everybody, author of the book Power, Why Some People Have It and Others Don't. Jeffrey, we're going to break here for some commercials, but when we come back, I want to get into a little bit more of the psychology behind the book as you, the author. What is it that decided to get you excited about writing about power? Don't answer that now. Answer it when we come back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Today's show's theme is power. And we have two power brokers that we're talking to today. In my first half hour, we're talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, who's written the book Power, Why Some People Have It and Others Don't. And we were getting into this whole concept of how you can actually develop your skills and become more powerful. And Jeffrey, before we went away to the break, I wanted to ask you, on a personal level, what intrigued you to write about the subject of power?
Well, I think two things. First of all, it is a subject that you know, in 1979, Rosabeth Moss Kanter teaches at Harvard Business School called Power, the Organization's Last Dirty Secret. And 30 years later, it is still the organization's last dirty secret. People will talk about money, and they talk a lot about sex, particularly in California. But people, I think, are often embarrassed to talk about power. But it is a very, very, very important organizational phenomenon. And so if I want you know, people to be successful, you know, people need to really understand. And I've been teaching about this and thinking about this and doing research on this for so many years. I wanted to share this knowledge with a broader set of people than I come in contact with on a personal basis through my teaching at Stanford. That's number one. Number two, I am in many respects a child of the 60s, and therefore kind of a little anti-establishment. And part of, I think, a lot of the emphasis on most management books is how to make organizations successful, and that's obviously important. But I also wanted to write a book that spoke to how to make individuals successful, because individual success and organizational success are not necessarily that highly correlated, in case we haven't been reading the paper and noticing that some CFOs of large financial institutions left with hundreds of millions of dollars even as their organizations went in the toilet and thousands and thousands and thousands of people got laid off. So my second reason for writing this book is to try to give people some things, some practical suggestions based upon good social science research that they could actually implement to make themselves more successful if they wanted to do that.
All right. Well, let's talk about a case study there. It just prompted in my mind an example that you could give us some insight on from the real world, and that would be Bob Nardelli, who was the head of Home Depot. Then he left Home Depot to become the head of Chrysler for the holding company that invested in Chrysler. How is it that here's a man who didn't do so well at Home Depot, didn't do so well at Chrysler, and yet is in the catbird seat in both companies?
Well, that's because, you know, there's some research that shows that in only in 50% of the cases of CEOs that actually drove their companies into bankruptcy did the CEOs wind up losing their job.
Wow.
I think the critical issue here is one's relationship to the boss. And by the way, even when you're the CEO, you have a boss. It's called the board of directors. And obviously for people not in that position, you have a boss. It's your person to who, it's the person to whom you have a direct line reporting relationship. And if you can build a good relationship with that individual, flatter them, you know, be deferent to them, show them how wonderful they are, and build their self-esteem, you can probably survive lots of mistakes. And by the same token, if you don't have a good relationship with the boss, if you don't show sufficient deference, if you're not, you know, flattering of them at all moments, you can do a great job and still lose your job. And I think, you know, Bob Nardelli and many other of these successful people understand the importance of managing up, and they're very good at doing it.
We're talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, everybody, author of the book Power, Why Some People Have It and Some People Don't. I think it's a fascinating case study. Also in your book, there was a little bit of trivia there that piqued my interest about flattery and flattering your boss. And there were some studies done to find out how much flattery of your boss is too much flattery. What were the results of that study? I found it amusing.
Well, my colleague Jennifer Chapman at Berkeley went out. She thought that there was some kind of curvilinear relationship where, you know, flattery would be fine up to a point, but beyond some point, people must be able to see through it, and it would be, you know, it would be like too much. That may still be true, but she couldn't find the point beyond which too much was had any negative effect. I by the way think people underestimate the power of flattery. If I flatter you, there are two ways of taking it. One is to say, well, you know, here's somebody who's strategically trying to manipulate me, and that makes you feel bad about the individual, and it makes you feel bad about yourself because you think you can be so readily manipulated. Or you can say, here's a human being who understands my wonderful skills. What a great social perceiver. What a great perceiver of me. And, you know, and you feel better about the person, and you feel better about yourself. So you are motivated to think that flattery is sincere. And by the way, I'm as susceptible to this as anybody else. As soon as you told me you like my book, my face beamed.
Well, it just goes to show you the research was right. There can never be too much flattery, and it's so true. Let's change course here just a little bit if we can, Jeffrey. What are some of the stumbling blocks to obtaining power?
Well, I think the biggest stumbling block, frankly, is ourselves. People will often not be as bold as they should be, not be willing to ask for help, not be willing to take risks and to, you know, to do some things that may offend other people. I think a lot of folks worry a lot about likability and being liked, and that it's important to be liked, and obviously you don't want to be, you don't want to do things that will get you disliked just unnecessarily. Once you have a lot of power and influence, other people will come to like you. So just worry about the power and don't also worry so much about being liked. And I think a third barrier that we put in front of ourselves is, are we willing to work as hard as it takes and pay the price, including one of the prices is visibility. I think the Mark Hurd saga at Hewlett-Packard tells you that when you become a CEO, there's no such thing as a private dinner.
Right.
And, I look at Barack Obama's life, and I wouldn't want that. I mean, you have no privacy. You're always on stage. People are watching your every move. Your wife takes a vacation to Spain with your daughters. And, why is she in Spain, and should she be there, and whatever. You and I can go on vacation. Nobody cares.
That's so true. Very true. Well, now, Jeffrey, you bring up the likability factor, which leads me down another path that I wanted to explore, and that is the difference between the way men and women perceive power and attain power and go after power. So what is the breakdown across gender lines for power?
Well, there are obviously huge exceptions to this generalization because there's huge variation within each gender. But in general, in part because of how they have been socialized and raised, this is clearly not genetic. I mean, you learn this early in life. Women, I think, are more concerned, even than men, though many men are also concerned, about how they are perceived by others and whether, people like them and can care about them and think that they're behaving in an acceptable way. So I think women face even more conformity pressures and pressures, to be liked than men do. And as a consequence, they often, I think, adopt a much too soft strategy, and they're not as hard as they need to be. And I would quote from you just kind of one of my favorite kind of passages from the book, which is about Condoleezza Rice, who was provost at Stanford and national security advisor under President George Bush and Secretary of State. And she was known at Stanford for being someone that you did not want to cross. And there's a quote about her. Rice slashed the budget and challenged proponents of affirmative action, earning the enmity of many students and much of the faculty for her blunt style. Rice's credo, as she told one protege, was that people may oppose you, but when they realize you can hurt them, they'll join your side. And I think that's one of the reasons why she has and continues to have, or had and continues to have, the kind of power and prominence that she has. And certainly, when you look at the people running for political office in California, and this is true for Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein, it's certainly true for Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina. These are not shy, retiring, modest, non-self-promoting.
There are no shrinking violets, that's for sure.
Want to be stranded on a desert island with. These are people who know what they want and are willing to do what it takes to get it.
Yeah, that is great. We're talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, everybody. Some of the things that I like in your book is that it's so counterintuitive. One of the other counterintuitive things that you teach there, too, is you believe that you are not responsible for your own success, which I thought was kind of interesting because everybody tells you, be responsible for your own success, blah, blah, blah. Why is it that we're not responsible for our own success? You sort of touched on this earlier, but I want to dig deeper into this.
Sure. Well, you're not responsible for your own success, except to the extent that you are kind of responsible in the following way. I mean, in an organization, the person who's responsible for your success is the individual who can promote you or, on the other hand, fire you. And so you are, your hard work and blinding ambition by and in and of itself is not necessarily going to make you successful. What will make you successful is having relationships with people in power who can make you successful, or for the other extreme, can cause you to lose your job. So your responsibility is to make sure that you build positive relationships with those in power. And that's true both inside your organization and outside the organization. You ought to find high-status people and try to build effective relationships with those individuals, so they will sponsor you. And to go back to your issue on women, there's just a very interesting article in the Harvard Business Review about mentoring, and it says women have, or is likely, these are high potential MBA women. Women are actually even more likely to have mentors than men, but women are much less likely to have sponsors. And the difference between a mentor and a sponsor is a mentor gives you advice, and a sponsor gets you a promotion.
I see. Very interesting finding. That's in this current issue of the Harvard Business Review. We're talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, everybody. Another counterintuitive thing that you teach in your book, which I think is great, is that you believe that everybody should take an acting or a public speaking class. Now, that's not something that you would normally associate a business school professor espousing. Why do you advocate this?
Well, I advocate that for a simple reason, that I think part of one of the determinants of how much power you have and part of your own power is how you show up in situations. And, you know, if you show up in a timid fashion and don't act like you know what you're doing and don't project a lot of energy and competence, it's going to be hard to get others to follow you, and people aren't going to think you're going to be successful, and that becomes self-fulfilling because the best people only want to work with people who they think are going to become powerful and successful. So to the extent that you learn how to act and speak with power, you do better. And there are lots of examples of that. Just watch the recent congressional hearings with Lloyd Blankfein from Goldman Sachs, who showed up in a very different way than Tony Hayward of BP.
Right. Oh, well said. Everybody, we've been talking to Jeffrey Pfeffer, who is the author of the book Power, Why Some People Have It and Others Don't, written up very favorably in The Economist, perhaps the best business magazine in the entire world. I would heartily recommend that you go out and get this. Jeffrey, we're out of time. I can't believe it. We'll have to have you back at some point in the future. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
And thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure.